Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
You're listening to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Vera Yu.
And we are here today to discuss our June book club pick, Not Your Sidekick by C.B. Lee. As always, if you have any comments about our discussion, you can sound off on the Books and Boba Goodreads group. Should we just jump right in?
Yeah, sure. Let's start with the book jacket description, as always.
Yeah.
Before we start, though, we will be spoiling the hell out of this book. So if you plan to read it and you care about spoilers, then I suggest you click pause and come back to it later. And
Standard spoiler disclaimer.
And the book jacket description goes, where superpowers are common, but internships are complicated. Just ask high school nobody Jessica Tran. Despite her heroic lineage, Jess is resigned to a life without superpowers and is merely looking to beef up her college applications when she stumbles upon the perfect paid internship. Only it turns out to be for the town's most heinous supervillain. On the upside, she gets to work with her longtime secret crush, Abby, whom Jess thinks may have a secret of her own. Then there's the budding attraction to her fellow intern, the mysterious M, who never seems to be in the same place as Abby. But what starts as a fun way to spite her superhero parents takes a sudden and dangerous turn when she uncovers a plot larger than heroes and villains altogether.
Ooh. So already, as you may know, Not Your Sidekick is... a superhero... Is it just a genre in itself? Is it science fiction? Is it fantasy?
I mean, this would science fiction. This fantasy? Would kind of be like an urban post dystopian.
Yeah,
sci-fi
because it takes place post apocalypse, but a post apocalypse where society has started to rebuild.
Oh yeah, I said post dystopian. That's incorrect. Yeah. No.
Well, I imagine there was a dystopia, and the way that the book sets up the history, there was a period of like, well. What's a dystopia? Dystopia is just like...
Dystopia is when society is... Like
there's different dystopias, right? And it's when society reaches a point where it's bad habits catch up to them, I think.
Yeah, kind of.
So you have like post-capitalist dystopia, which we're hurtling towards right now.
And it's also like questionable morality and like... And how they like value human lives.
Like is it like the 1984 type of dystopia? Is it a like Mad Max type dystopia?
Yeah.
Is it, you know?
But honestly, the setting for Not Your Sidekick, like they figured a lot of stuff out, like how to have clean energy and and how to have self-driving cars and like a lot of problems that we have now is kind of solved in this setting. And it's really funny because the book takes place like, what, 200 years from our future?
I think so. Or like 25 something, I think. Like 200-300 years.
Yeah. But like it's set kind of 200-300 years after our present timeline. And it's been a number of years since the big dystopian incident happened, which is like a solar flare.
Well, a solar flare
activates like the nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
And decimates like more than half of the global population.
Like, way more than half. I think like only about a third or so remain.
Yeah. Like, because of the solar flare, it activated like superpower genes in people.
Yeah, it activated superpower genes, but it also caused a war for resources.
Oh, yeah.
So that's World War III, according to the book, which caused like basically a shift in, I guess, global politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like our main character, Jess, she belongs to, I forgot the name of the coalition that she's a part of, but it's a coalition that is...
It's the North American Coalition.
Okay, so
they
it's
combine
like,
North America, like basically the countries of North America combined.
Yeah, Canada, America, and I think even some parts of like Mexico.
It's Canada, America, and Mexico. Like,
yeah.
It's the North American continent is now one big like superpower.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they hint at other superpowers, other abroad, but the story takes place in like a small town, Arizona.
Andover.
Yeah,
I kept thinking like Handover, and I was like, no, it's there's no H like Andover. Yeah, this was since all the dystopia stuff happened way before, and it's like history. It's what kids learn in their history classes. I was like, oh, I'm not too stressed out about it. It's just, like society has kind of figured itself out. And
I mean, I feel like the story takes place at a part of the cycle where it's kind of a utopia in a way because people have their problems taken care of. They have superheroes like who like take care of things for them. The main antagonist, which we'll talk about later, would like people to think it's a utopia, but it's also teetering on the brink of a next dystopia. Because you're getting so I guess this is where spoilers start. The main antagonist wants to control everyone, right?
Yeah.
Wants to control the narrative and basically turn it into a police state, which is kind of where dystopia starts.
Yeah, but until then, everything is kind of happy.
Yeah,
this is a very optimistic post-apocalyptic world, which I very much appreciated. I really liked how the book opened up. We have the scene where Jess is in the middle of the desert and she's attempting to fly because both of her parents are superheroes, and she's like going through a checklist of powers that she could have, and like flying is like the last one.
Yeah,
and she fails, and she's just like, oh, I guess I'm just gonna be a mediocre human being, and It's interesting because Jess has these expectations of herself. Like, her parents aren't, like, pushing her to be a superhero. But she feels, like, that burden. She's like, I really want to live up to...
Well, my parents are, so I should also be.
Yeah. Right. Also, like, it doesn't help that her older sister is also a superhero.
And that her dad is so, like, into it, right? That, like, it feels like you're disappointing your parents if you're not, which is a very... And Jess, the main character, is a Vietnamese, not American, but, like, North American collector, like, Vietnamese diaspora, second generation from a refugee family.
Chinese-Vietnamese,
yeah.
Yeah, I really like that scene because it just, like, establishes, like, it just establishes her character so well, and... I thought this book was going to go more, more comic book-y with its plot.
You mean, like, with the stakes?
Yeah, with, like, stakes and stuff. It was more slice of life than big superhero, story plot lines. Like, oh, we must, like, get... It's like, oh, we must get the gauntlet or something.
Yeah, there was no, like, world-ending implications. Well, the stakes do get high towards the end.
Yeah, towards the end.
But there wasn't any, like, there's no imminent apocalyptic level threat, right?
Yeah, I really like that slice of life, component to this book. And I thought it was really funny how, even though this is set like 200, 300 years after our present timeline and America doesn't really exist anymore, there were so many things that were relatable in terms of like Asian American second generation experiences, especially the whole like, oh, I can't live up to my parents' expectations.
There's that. There was the scene in the banh mi shop.
Oh, my God. That is my favorite scene in this book. Like,
where Jess tries to order in Vietnamese, but realizes her Vietnamese isn't good enough. So she has to abort and just like.
I actually have a quote from that scene that I really liked. And it goes, Jess often feels as if she's not Chinese enough in certain situations and not Vietnamese enough in others. It's awkward when you're not quite one, but not quite the other. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dang. I really, really like that scene because it just shows like how so many Asian American second gens feel. Like we don't feel like we fit anywhere. And you kind of see it kind of you see this theme kind of repeat itself like in the book. Like Jess often tries to find her footing. Like her parents have superpowers and she doesn't. And she's just like, where do I fit in this world where superpowers are kind of valued?
It's very middle child, too. She's like definitely like the middle child, like the forgotten one, because she's sandwiched between her sister, who has like the powers of her parents, a more stronger version of it, which is like the immigrant's dream, right?
Yeah.
Like, you are us, but better.
Yeah.
And her younger brother, who is supposedly like a super genius.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't need superpowers. He like builds... Like, he's like Batman. He, like, builds all these gadgets and stuff.
Yeah. And so she's like, she just, but I do like how she doesn't, like, you can tell it bothers her, but she's not, like, dwelling on it. She's just like, okay, what's the next best option? I guess I'll find an internship.
Yeah.
I guess I'll work on my college applications, which
is so Asian, by the way. He's like, oh, let me bulk up my college applications by doing like all these internships and extracurricular activities. And I'm like, oh, dang, like high school sucked.
I do like, I guess one thing we didn't mention off the top, which you do find out, and it's like the book wears this on the sleeve. It's the main character, Jess, is a, is she bi in this book?
Yeah, she's bisexual.
And so this is one of the few queer people of color superhero comics featuring Asian lead. So
yeah, it's probably the first one I've read with like a queer Asian American protagonist, because I've seen books where you do have Asian American queer teenagers, but they're kind of in the sidelines.
Right.
And there you go. Not your sidekick, right?
Yeah. The fact that this book centers on her... On her crush and on her... You know, like, it works on a lot of levels. And it also shows you that, like, you know, you can write stories about queer characters without them being queer as, like... You don't have to show them being queer all the time.
Yeah, this is not a coming out novel, which I really appreciated. And it's so rare to see like a girl couple without like some tragedy coming out of it. Like, how many movies and how many books have you read where you have like two girls who fall in love with each other and then like something happens to one of the girls? It's like, oh, my parents don't approve, or like one of them ends up dead. And and it's just so nice you don't have those implications in this novel. And also it's really nice to see so many different types of queer people in this novel, because you do have Bells, who is a black trans boy, and then you also have Emma, who seems to be demi-romantic, but I'm not sure. It's not really...
What does that mean? That's a new word for me.
Demi-romantic means... I hope this is correct.
Is that just like she just loves all the time?
Everyone? No. I think... Yeah. So a demi-romantic is a type of... to be a demi-romantic, it means that you only experience romantic attraction after kind of having an emotional connection beforehand. So I think Emma is a demi-romantic, but it's not mentioned specifically in the book. I think it's mentioned later on.
Oh.
And I know, like, and I know from Not Your Villain that Emma's parents are lesbians. So there's that as well.
Okay.
So you have, like, so many different types of sexuality.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that was a thing. I just thought, you know, she just had a bunch of crushes, but...
I mean, in the book, she does, like, openly say, like, oh, that person's cute. And, like, it's like, oh, like, Abby's really pretty. Like, but yeah, it's, like, really, it's really nice to have such a diverse cast.
Yeah.
And like, not be focused on on just their sexuality. Like, there is, like, a plot to it. And everyone is just kind of themselves.
There's something about the way that she wrote, too, that, like, I remember... hearing that Bells was a trans character, but I didn't really think about it until they, like, brought it up in, like, one line in the middle of the book, which wasn't even describing him, but it was just Abby's character, like, saying, oh, I thought he was, like, I didn't know what his pronouns were.
Yeah, so she uses the pronouns they, and Jess says, like, oh, like, it's okay, it's nice that you use the pronoun they because you weren't sure.
But even after that, I was like, he's still Bells, like,
yeah
and I think that's a testament to how this book was, like, how she approached these characters as, like, their queerness isn't othering, it's just part of their character.
The only little bit you kind of get a glimpse at othering is when Jess talks about how she accidentally came out as bisexual by reading a poem in class, and how, like, the Rainbow Allies Club at her school, they're, like, constantly trying to recruit her. And she says, oh, I'm bisexual, not lesbian. And then, like, the club president's like, oh, and then kind of gives her, like, the shady look, like the side eye. And it's like, okay, there's, like, a little bit of biphobia in this club. Mm. But, like, you know, like, you blink and it's just gone. Like, doesn't focus on it.
What did you think about the whole... like, Rainbow Coalition subplot? It reminded me of, like, in college where I tried to join, like, the Asian, like, it was like a pan-Asian group, but they were very politically active. And this was before, like, I got comfortable, like, talking about politics and thinking about, like, Asian American as a political thing. And so I kind of got scared off. And whenever they saw me on campus, it was like, I was like, when are you coming back? And I'm like, I don't know. Sometime.
I've kind of had, like, a similar thing, like, in because, like, in high school, like, I was part of, like, the Korean arts club, and the thing is, like, I went because I did traditional dance, and, you know, I went only for that. I went only for, like, exposure to, like, traditional arts and to learn more about my culture, because it was at that moment in my life where I was like, okay, I'm gonna, like, open up to, like, to, like, my parents' culture, because before that I was just like, fuck being Korean. But then, like, the club members there, they were very cliquey, and they would be like, oh, let's go out to eat. And I'm like, no, we are not friends outside of this club, because we have nothing in common. So, like, that pushiness in, like, join our club, be, like, let's do everything together. I'm just like, I understand.
Yeah, and that was the other thing, too. Like, they were described in the book as a very, like, it was the guy and his friends were the club. And that's how I felt, too. It's like, am I coming out to your thing, but all you're really doing is hanging out together and doing inside jokes and making me feel, I look how good friends we are. Don't you want to be a part of this? But at the same time, like,
yeah,
to me, it's like, look how good friends you are. Why, where do I fit in that?
Yeah, exactly. Right? So it comes back to the theme of, like, Jess trying to find, like, a place to belong. And, you know, she finds a little bit of that with her friends. Like, her friends are super funny. Like I think it's Bells who likes, like, really old things. Like, they watch DVDs.
I think they all like really old
things. Okay, they all like really old things.
Because apparently, like pre-disaster media has been banned.
Yeah. And so, it's just like, wow, DVDs. Like, people don't even buy DVDs in our day and age. So it's really funny. It's just like a really funny, quirky thing. But yeah, like Abby signing up for her internship and then going and finding out that it's owned by supervillains.
Yeah.
And she's just like, she could have easily turned that down. But then there was like, well, it's paid and I guess it's like subverting my parents' expectations of me.
Well, so. Also her crush is also working there.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Because, yeah. So I like how they set up, like, in this small town, you have also small town heroes assigned to it, right? So you have your, like, I guess, and then in the town of Andover, the small town heroes are Jess's parents, Smasher and Shockwave.
Yeah. But it's like, sorry, we're like jumping all over the place, but I really like the fact that her mom is just like, I don't know, I really like being a real estate agent. And like in that town, like the superhero business is kind of like,
yeah,
declined because the villains aren't showing up. Yeah, they disappeared. So there's like nothing for Jess's parents to do. And they both take it in very different ways.
It reminded me of Randall Park and Constance Wu's characters in Fresh Off the Boat, where like the mom just wants to hustle. And like,
oh, yeah.
She wants to like be her own person. She wants to succeed and be good at what she does. And the dad just wants to be American so much. He just wants to be part of the League of Superheroes. He's bought into like this new American dream.
Yeah. And there's like tiers to like which category of like superhero you are. Mm-hmm. Like there's the A class, which is like you have like many different powers and you're able to like retain those powers for a long time.
Yeah.
And then like her parents are kind of in the lower rung and that's why they were assigned to like the middle of the desert.
Yeah. But then the villains are also like their crime is like changing signs and putting bubbles in the country club. And I mean, the interesting thing is like even from the beginning when you read about when CB describes the crimes of Master and Mistress Mischief, who are the neighborhood supervillains, they seem more like activists than villains. Yeah. Right? They're trying to like through their crimes they're trying to expose inequality and
wake up, sheeple.
Like, they sabotage the country club sprinklers to sprinkle out bubbles to demonstrate how they're wasting water, a precious resource, on something that doesn't benefit anyone but the rich.
And it's, like, really funny that, like, they're super rich.
Yeah.
Because, like, of all, like, the technology that they invent for their corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, oh, funny, like. Yeah. Like, it's just like, oh, everybody uses their tech and it like betters their lives, but they're made by supervillains.
Yeah. I also like the so you eventually find out that Abby, Jess's crush, is the daughter of the supervillains. And then they lampshade this, but it became kind of like a Romeo, like not Romeo and Juliet thing, but like two rival houses and they're like daughters fall in love.
Yeah, but it's really not that big of a deal.
Yeah. And yeah, like just finds out that that Abby also likes her.
Yeah. And I guess we should mention like the mysterious M.
Yeah.
At, like the internship.
It was fun. Like, when did you start suspecting that they were the same person? Because like, I thought right away.
Yeah, same here. Immediately. as soon as Abby was like, okay, I'm gonna like go do my thing. Mm-hmm. And then immediately after, like, M shows up. And I was like, oh, I see where this is going. Okay.
And M is described as the Mischief's, protege who wears his, like, boss's suit.
Yeah.
Because I guess Abby's dad, Master Mischief, wears a robot suit. Because his power is the power to manipulate electronics.
Yeah. Magneto, pretty much. But with, like, technology.
And then her mom's power was telekinesis.
Yeah.
And I like, and this is like further down, but the way they characterize it is like her mom is actually a really powerful superhero, like probably like class A or above, but she chose to become a villain out of love. And I want to see that story from like
Yeah, it's probably going to show up in Abby's book because there are four books.
Right.
In
we talked to the author C.B. Lee, and we're going to put that interview out maybe probably next week for you as a supplement to this discussion. But yeah, she announced that there's going to be four books in the series.
Yeah. I felt pretty bad for Abby because her parents had disappeared, and it's not even like it's like, oh, they disappeared for 2 weeks. Like they disappeared for like over a month, and you know, she's like an only child, and she's taking care of like she's trying to desperately find her parents, but she can't really look for help because they're villains.
Right.
And
so at first she brought Jess in as just to help her with the day-to-day so she can keep up appearances while she looked for her parents.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, help running her parents' company, right? Like, that's a lot to put on a high school student. And, yeah, just, like I feel like that is the reason why she and Jess get along, because, like, through her disguise as M, she's able to, like, open up more and finally have someone to, like, confide the secret in, right?
I liked... So this all leads to, like, Abby's search becomes the central plot point towards the second and third act of the book, once everything is revealed. And this is where the utopia part of this, like the post-dystopia utopia, cycles back to dystopia when you realize that even in, like, this, like, world of, you know, like, relative stress-free living, besides the fact that you can't eat meat because there's no meat, people with power still abuse it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and definitely.
That becomes like the main threat they find is they find out that the head superhero of the league, Captain Orion.
Yeah, right? Captain Orion.
She is basically doing experiments on villains, trying to increase her own power, and also basically using superheroes and the coverage of superheroes as like her own like Fox News like fake news like fake news propaganda system to keep everyone docile, pretty much.
Yeah,
right. Like, don't worry about anything, superheroes will take care of all your problems is the message she wants to give, and that's how she has power.
Yeah. And also, like, even with her power, like, she's like a D-class superhero and she takes like these drugs to like beef her up.
But her whole, and then, so she's technically the supervillain, and her whole thing is like, it's for your own good.
Yeah.
Right. And the sad part is her doctrine has like basically taken over Jess's older sister, Claudia, who looks up to Captain Orion and wants to be just like her, right? She colors her hair and everything. And I mean, one of the big like twists is that Claudia ends up being an antagonist.
Yeah, I kind of guessed that was gonna happen. I don't know. It's just like, I don't know how I thought it was gonna happen, probably because like Jess is trying to like do the right thing, right? To like help Abby find her parents and to expose this despicable plot of doing experiments on supervillains, and like you, and then it's like, okay, well, she needs to have like more of an obstacle than Captain Orion.
Yeah.
So I just kind of assumed that would happen. Also, like, sister rivalry is always kind of a thing in books. I don't know why, but it is. And yeah, but Bells, you find out that he has superpowers as well.
Yeah, he's
a shapeshifter. Yeah. And he's actually like the youngest superhero to be part of the league. And like Jess and Abby, they don't know until like much later in the book.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because Jess finds out she actually has a superpower. And I think this is also a very like, I don't know if it's meant to be an Asian American thing, but it is, where you find out you have a power that is not valued by your parents.
Oh, yeah.
Or society, but it's really good and you're really good at it. And I kind of felt that it's a pretty dope power, even though no one else really values it.
I thought it was really funny how that was like hinted at from the very first chapter when like her car GPS is like not working. And she's like, I guess I will just drive. this way until I reach something. I have a feeling that I'm going the right way. And like it turns out to like be all okay.
Yeah, she has the power of direction, right?
Yeah. And it's really funny how she finds out how she has that power.
Because she's hungry.
Yeah, because she's hungry and she's at like the internship office and she's like, I'm going to cook us some ramen. Yeah. And she just like walks forward and like finds the kitchen and then finds where the ramen noodles are.
And, well, also like, she like walks into the secret lair pretty much.
Yeah. And Abby's just like, that's not possible. Like, how did you do that? Like, that has to be a power. And she's just like, no, it's just me. I'm good with directions. It's like, no, that is your power.
Yeah. So that's how they find out that. Because they've introduced Chameleon before as the newest superhero. Mm-hmm. They need to find him because they need his power to break into the secret lab where Abby's parents are supposedly being held.
Yeah.
And then he gets involved because there's this plot point where they're saying that, like, oh, look at all these superhero victories. And then Jess was like, this is way too well produced to be a found footage, live footage recreation of a found footage video of this fight. Look at the optimal angles right? And so you find out that it's actually Belle's pretending to be the villain, the missing villains in those like fake, and it's like it's like fake news propaganda videos that the Superhero League created to basically show that they're doing their jobs.
Yeah, like in Not Your Villain, those were like his early assignments because mm-hmm. they're like, oh, it'll be good for you to get like hand-to-hand combat training. And that was him like doing training, but he thought that like the other superhero knew that he wasn't the supervillain, but that wasn't the case. So like it's pretty funny how like you find that out like in the middle and you're like, oh, then who like if the supervillains are disappearing, then who is that? And and it like ties in together pretty well. One thing that like stood out to me, like one scene that stood out to me, was when Jess and Abby go to confront Captain Orion, and Abby is down because like Captain Orion like injects something in her which like disturbs her powers.
Right.
And Jess, who doesn't really have any aggressive superpowers, she can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And Captain Orion is like making fun of her parents, being like, oh, they should have just stayed in Asia. And and like she makes fun of their accents and says, oh, like, do you think they'll ever be on like milk cartons? And I'm just like, oh, okay, like racism still exists in this world.
Like, she's not very nice. No, and she's actually not. Like the worst. And I mean, I haven't read Not Your Villain yet, but I wonder if like that realization will dawn on Claudia or not. But yeah, she essentially evil monologues and just reveals herself to be just like a petty tyrant, right?
Yeah. Like the superhero tropes in this book, it's like when you're reading, you're like, oh, the author knew that this was a trope and purposely like made it more sarcastic, more exaggerated. Like the evil monologue, I'm just like, that happens in every movie, every comic book, but like it's there and you know that it's like way over the top when you're reading it.
Well, I mean, it's also that trope that like the good villains think they're the hero, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, the villain is the hero.
Yeah, but overall, I thought this was a very fun read. Like,
it was super breezy. I mean, that was so we had a comment from Goodreads member Jazz, who also enjoyed the book, enjoyed that it was like a superhero sci-fi dystopian that was up her alley. And she said, I know people who've read it found it predictable, but its predictability is one of the reasons I enjoyed so much. There is definitely a place for LGBT fiction that is sad and depicts our very real problems, but it is mentally and emotionally exhausting to read. So to read a lighthearted book knowing that Jess will, one, get the girl, and two, come out alive at the end of the story, is not only refreshing, but also really healing. Sometimes it's just nice to see a bi-Asian character in one of your favorite genres. Tired tropes are a lot less tiring when the characters involved actually look and act like you. Which, like, yeah, it makes sense, right? There's and there's something that we've experienced too, which is like the rom-com genre revitalized by Asian American leads.
That's all you need, you know?
And like, yeah, I'm on board. And I'm not even like a rom-com kind of guy.
Yeah.
And the fact that like and I know the biggest trope in like queer media is if you have a queer character, they must have like either a tragic backstory or something tragic happens to one or both of them.
Yeah. Like, or like the entire book is about the discrimination that they face. And yeah. It's nice that everyone at their school is kind of okay with like everyone's like sexual identity. And it's like, yeah, like,
yeah,
like there's definitely a place for those books. But it's also very important that you have stories where, like, queer kids can just be queer kids and they can see themselves as heroes. They can see themselves as just, they can see queer characters just having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, this book really did remind me of Heroin Complex, because that's also a book with Asian American superheroes.
Yeah.
And, like, it's really funny. And, of course, there is, like, a... like an evil plot to it, but it subverts superhero tropes and just makes fun of it, kind of. And it's about like two Asian American girls who are just having fun. And that's how I felt about this book. It's about Jess and her friends just kind of having fun, because a lot of the book is about them just at school and just like being friends.
Yeah.
And like just kind of hanging out. And then you have like this plot in the background about supervillains disappearing,
and the big battle isn't even like the climax, right? It's the after the climax. There's a whole like area in the desert where they're just trying to get home.
Yeah, that was like pretty interesting. Where like Jess and Abby are kind of lost in the desert, and Jess is like, "I got this. I like human GPS right here. If I just walk this way, there will be water. If I walk that way, then like we'll find like a gas station."
Kind of gives her
somewhere.
Like her chance to shine.
Yeah, it's not a useless power after all. She's actually, like, I would want that superpower. I have no sense of direction whatsoever. But yeah, like it. You know how, like, have you seen Ocean's 8?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, the reason why I really liked Ocean's 8 was, one, like, an all-female cast, right? And it's really nice to see that just in any movie. But it was also just, you know, it was stress-free. You knew that they were going to get away with it. They knew that, like, the heist would be successful. And it was just, like, really satisfying to just see a group of competent women just, like, doing their work, getting their shit done, and no one, like no one really hindering them. And, like, that's the thing about this book. It's, like, really nice that you, like our Goodreads member said, Jess, like, you read the book and you're like, I know that everything's going to be okay. I know that Jess is going to get the girl and, the day is going to be saved. So I think it's really nice to have a stress-free read like that. There's definitely a place for those books.
I mean, like we said, we kind of predicted the twists right when they started getting foreshadowed. But that didn't detract from the enjoyment of reading this type of book. And one trope that I've started noticing in Asian American authors that I do not have a problem with is them describing our food.
Oh yeah, give me all the food porn. Like, I am adding CB Lee to the list of authors who write excellent food descriptions. Like, in that list is like Cindy Pond, author of Want, and also
Maureen Gu
of Yang Zhe-Chu, author of The Ghost Bride, which we read on this podcast.
Yeah,
it's nice to see our culture in contemporary books. Like, how long have we had Asian American books where it's all about the immigrant struggle or like the gap between second generation and first generation, and like living up to your parents' expectations. Like I said, there is a place for those books. It's really important that we have those books, but it's nice that we are getting more contemporary and fantasy. And
at the same time, though, we kind of had all of that in this book too.
We did, you know, in small doses.
I mean, you have the trying to be as super as your parents, and I mean, if you like tear out all like the metaphor, and this is maybe me reading too much into it, like our parents, especially first generation immigrants, are kind of superheroes, right? They're super brave, and they're super like they did stuff that we would never like think about doing,
yeah,
to survive. And that was part of that came out in the reason why, like, even though Jess's mom suspected things, like knew that the system was unfair and maybe even corrupt, they didn't say anything because it was how they were raising their kids. It's how they got their home, got their jobs, and how they were able to survive in this new country. Because their family were pretty much refugees from,
yeah,
like future Southeast Asia too.
No, isn't that interesting that like there are refugees in, yeah, like 200, 300 years from now? I mean, obviously, this is fiction, and of course, like, C.B. Lee drew from a lot of, like, her own experiences and her parents' experiences. But, yeah, like...
Yeah, I mean, they hinted at there's larger global conflicts that the North American collective was funding and, like, pretty much playing shadow politics around the world, and that was the reason why they needed superheroes to keep everyone, like... unaware of the larger problems. Like, as long as there's someone taking care of our day-to-day problems, i.e. like super villains, mm-hmm, then they don't need to worry about what's happening outside.
Yeah,
right. And what did you think about, like, is this something that I'm hoping the next book delves into, is the fact that, like, superpower people are assigned to be heroes or villains by the government.
Yeah,
so they're not even like... It's the whole thing is pretty much is the whole thing is fixed.
Yeah, the whole thing is just like smoke and mirrors, yeah, really.
Like your job is to be a villain. You're assigned to this town to be this person's arch rival. And yeah, that's like, for the first book was pretty much breaching the controversy. And yeah, I'm assuming the next three books will like kind of blow it all open.
Yeah.
Somehow.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, Abby's parents, they didn't want Abby to go into, like, superhero training or, yeah, superpower training. And
no, they did, because Abby's father was working with the government to get her into the superhero track. Because she was pre-assigned the villain track.
Because her parents are villains.
Because her parents are villains, and because Captain Orion is a jerk.
Yeah.
Who, like, has a grudge. And I don't know if they'll build on this, but Captain Orion used to date Abby's father.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about that.
And then Abby's mother got with them, and then they became villains in superhero category. Because Captain Orion's was like, she has nepotism on her side too, because her grandfather was the founder of the Heroes League of Heroes, right?
Mm-hmm. yeah, nepotism. Yeah, that never goes away.
Because that's the center spark. Because Abby's father builds Monrobots, because mm-hmm, his last name is Monroe. Which are like your personal like robot assistant, right? They do like,
yeah,
menial chores around the house. They're kind of sentient, but they have the newest versions have a self-defense protocol, which is supposed to be for security, right? Keeping out burglars and stuff, but also when turned on, they can murder anybody in the house. So the government wants access to that function, which has been, you know, blocked and like locked away by Abby's father, because they want to be able to assassinate anyone they want.
Woof. Woof.
Which, like, yeah, like, again, even in this like kind of fluffy utopian, like worry-free future, people with power still.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think about the whole, like, superheroes are pretty much the propaganda of the government? That's what I hope the future books will start delving into. And you've read the next book, most of it.
Yeah, most of it, yeah.
Do they get more into that?
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Looking forward to that.
I freaking love Bells, you guys. Like, Bells is great. And I'm really enjoying, like his story and not your villain. So I definitely recommend picking that up if you guys are more interested in the story of in the world of Not Your Sidekick. And yeah, like I'm really excited. I think I am most excited to read about Abby's story because there's like so much about her that is kind of shrouded in mystery. Aside from her parents being supervillains, but like I would definitely want to know more about like how what that experience is
for sure, right? Because the books also are from different characters' POV.
Yeah.
So, this one obviously Abby is Jess's crush, so she's going to be really idealized.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like how does that feel when your parents are kind of, you know, your parents are kind of like quote unquote despised? I mean, they're like small time supervillains, but like they're seen in a negative light by the community, and like you live your day-to-day life like hearing things about your parents and people like saying bad things about them, like what is that experience like? And
yeah,
like having this double life, like
even perception wise, you remember that part where they were going through, because I guess all the heroes get their own comics, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And like just saying, yeah, like my mom's boobs aren't that big, but they're drawn that way because that's how, like, basically, like, I feel like it felt like the characters in mass media were whitewashed in a sense. Like, they were misrepresented in physical form because it's easier to expect heroes to be like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'll do it for a discussion. Any last thoughts about Not Your Sidekick?
I remember when this book was announced, like this was right around when we started our podcast and it was published around the same time as Heroine Complex. Yeah. And those two books were kind of like marketed towards together. Mm-hmm. And I think it was by accident because they're not from the same publisher. But I remember the hype around this book. I remember it being retweeted a lot and people saying like, oh my god, this is a bisexual Asian American protagonist, this is amazing. And like just the cover, right? You have like, she's clearly Asian in the cover, and that was like one of the first times we've seen like,
yeah,
like an Asian woman in a cover. And it was just like, yeah, like this is a big deal. I remember thinking like this is going to change a lot of things in Asian American literature. And it turns out that like I was right. Yeah. like
it's interesting how excited you can get about finally seeing something different, something that you can relate to more. Like, even though I don't, like, I'm a straight dude, like I related a whole lot to a lot of what this book had and her descriptions, and just about like reading that first chapter, I immediately thought of like, yeah, parental expectations. I get it. I get it. You know, her actual powers are revealed, and it's like, yeah, I get it. You know, being good at something that no one else thinks is worth anything. I mean, that's pretty much the Asian American creative struggle, right? For a lot of people.
Yeah. Like there aren't a lot of books that I can just hand over to people and being like, oh, this has like a queer person of color as a protagonist. Like, it's really, you know, it's kind of sad. Yeah. But like, I think that's like, that is getting like, that's improving in literature so far. And yeah, like I know that it, like, from Twitter, I know that it meant a lot to people in the queer Asian American community. And, you know, it's really amazing that like how one book can just be.
And it shows that you can tell these stories that center on people that have up till now been othered and still be a huge success, because there are people hungry for those point of views and for those stories. So congrats to CB Lee for success. Congrats on her making this into, because as you'll hear from our interview, this was only supposed to be one book. And then she was able to like get them to let her do a whole series.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Like, we talked about a lot of things with CB Lee. So definitely check that episode out.
Yeah. Coming out next week.
Yeah.
Reba, what are we reading for the month of July?
We are reading A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki. And it has some form of time travel, from what I hear.
Okay.
And it's been a book that's like that's been on our Goodreads suggested reads list for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are so many books in that list, and like like we've randomly picked books from that list, but you know, it's been on like I think it's like number two on that list, so cool. We're finally tackling it.
Yeah. My copy should be coming in today, so I can't wait to dig into it.
And I'm guessing that people already know what our August book club pick is. It's a really big rom-com movie that is coming out in theaters.
In theaters, not
in
Netflix.
In theaters, not Netflix. That is a different Asian-American rom-com.
Who knew that August would be the month of Asian American rom-coms,
right? Like you would think that it would be May on Asian American Heritage Month, but they were like, let's cash in on those summer tickets.
Let's cash in on the fact that eight is a lucky number in
the
Asian culture, especially Chinese.
Oh my god! But yeah, I finally saw To All the Boys I Loved Before, the movie, and. You know,
we can only give reactions right now.
I know. I wish the embargo would. But I really liked it. Mm. I am reading the book right now.
Yeah.
And I'm having a good time.
How is that feeling of reading the book after watching the movie? Because that's something I do.
It is a different experience. Like, I mean, like with Never Let Me Go, I didn't know that it was a book until I watched the movie.
Uh-huh.
And then I went back and read the book. But the book is so different from,
yeah,
I mean, like the plot points are the same, but like the experience is so different. And I'm kind of getting the same feeling with the book To All the Boys I've Loved Before, because you get into the character's head. It's first person narrative. So there's definitely like a shift there. There's like a gap there, but yeah, like I really enjoyed the film, and I'm really enjoying the book so far.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm excited for August because, oh boy, it's going to be a busy month for us.
Yeah. As always, you can subscribe to us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. We have a new website. Go to booksandbulwa.com to check out, keep up with the podcast, check out our past picks. And we're going to be probably doing some more blog posts going forward, highlighting new releases and maybe even some preview or review coverage. We don't know yet. We need publishers to send the stuff to cover. Also, sponsors would be nice, if you know of anybody.
Man, we're approached. Wait, is this our 50th episode?
It might be. Or 49th. We're close. We're close.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's a really weird feeling.
Thanks to the Potluck Podcast Collective for letting us be a part of their great network. Check out some of the other great Asian American hosted podcasts on the Potluck Collective by going to their website at podcastpotluck.com. And also special thanks to VC. We are recording at the Potluck Podcast Studios located within the Visual Communications Office in Little Tokyo, Los Angeles. VC is a nonprofit media org supporting Asian American, Pacific Islander creatives and filmmakers, and they're the ones in charge of the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival, among other programs. You can learn more about them at vconline.org. And thank you, Rira, for steering this ship for the last almost 50 episodes or 50
almost
episodes.
Almost 50 episodes. Like, I'm going to check later, and if it's 50 episodes, I'm going to be
like, this might be the 50th we've recorded, but we've got a couple interviews banked, so I'm
that's
not
true.
Exactly sure.
Yeah, that is true. But yeah, I didn't think that we would get this far.
You didn't?
I really didn't.
It's almost been 2 years. It's almost been 24 books.
When we started this book club, I'm just like, oh man, like book clubs, they're so like, they're such like an unreliable like social gathering or activity, I guess. And it's just like, I wonder how many books we're gonna read. I wonder when we're gonna like just give up at one point.
I mean, that's the benefit of the podcast, meaning that we're gathering with you, the listener, wherever you find us.
Yeah, there's a responsibility there.
And because of that, please do interact with us on our Goodreads group in the forums. Let us know what you think about the episode, what you think about the book, and basically, if you want to talk about anything Asian American book.
Yeah, also introduce yourself. Like, I was going through the introduction thread not that long ago, and just like the number of like different backgrounds that we have in our book club, it's really cool. Like, we have some people who live in England, and like sometimes they like pitch in on like what it's like for them to see representation, because apparently there's not a lot of Asian representation in British literature. And I was like, but you guys have so many Asian people in your country. That's so weird.
And you colonized half of Asia.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, where are they? So yeah, it's been really interesting. And I would love to see, we would like to know who's in our book club. Please introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Thanks
for listening. This has been Books and Boba discussing Not Your Sidekick by C.B. Lee. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.